He is DJ Schweitzer. I am Jeremy Lance. Hey, bud.
Hey, man.
How's your Sunday going?
It's been good. I've had better Sundays.
Yeah, okay.
I've had better Sundays. How's your Sunday going?
Not too shabby.
Yeah, I bet not.
It's going all right.
I wonder why that is. Reasons.
Had burgers on the grill.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, there was nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. And I bought Big Mac sauce.
Ooh.
Because you can do that now.
I know. That's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Modern society. Thank you.
2017.
Mm-hmm. Long way to go.
Flying cars, Big Mac sauce. Kind of the same thing.
Progress is measured in very different ways. And the fact that you can buy the sauce, the secret sauce, by the way, for Big Macs now is pretty incredible. But I'm wagering the fact that you had Big Mac sauce on home-grilled burgers is not the reason why you're in a good mood.
Oh, my team was in a complete sieve today. I don't know if you...
That's good.
Heard about that.
It depends on how you define that. I think we could probably get into that a little bit. But what Jeremy is, of course, insinuating is that he's had a good day because the first Wrong Side of the Pond Derby of the year took place today, and his team came out on top, much to most people's surprise.
Including mine.
Yeah, that's true. We exchanged tweets where you were expecting like, this to be a bloodbath.
We don't have 90 minutes to this. Don't worry.
Yeah. So you're obviously a happy cat tonight, and we'll spend ample time talking about this match. But I don't necessarily want to, you know, bore people with talking about this twice when we could just do it once. And maybe it's just because I don't feel like talking about it twice.
Would you prefer to talk about how awesome we are in fantasy?
No, I don't know about that.
Is that not accurate?
Yeah, no. I'm just going to say this has been a bad week for me overall. From a sporting landscape, the team that I work for had both a good week and a bad week, and mostly in the bad sense.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk a bit about that a little bit later on in the podcast too. But I've literally not had a team that I support win a game like in the last 8 days. So
bummer, dude.
It's been a fun sporting week. But yeah, let's get into the fantasy really quickly because it did go very poorly, much how everything else I did do. Let's start with the Premier League, of course. We now have 141 teams in the league. I guess that's positive. That's a little bit of growth. I slipped 26 places to 127th.
That means people saw the competition and were like, yeah, I can hop in a week late.
I could do that. I could be all right. You improved 21 places to 85th, though. Doing well. To be fair,
I think it's probably
that did help that for sure. I do have a bunch of Manchester City and Everton players in my squad, so I'm waiting on some more points there. I'm sure points will come in to the equation here, but it was not a good week for me, and I'm really banking on like
captaining Harry Kane was a bad choice.
Yeah, that didn't go very well. I don't know why I do this.
I captained Lacazette, so it wasn't much better.
He still has yet to score in August, like ever. So
yeah, I didn't realize that was a stat till today.
Yeah,
That became like a real talking point.
I knew about it before today, but today I heard about it a lot, and that really bugged
me. It was mentioned quite a bit.
We have a new leader at the top of that league as well. Mad King's reign. Jackson Fambrough is I'm assuming, Jackson, I'm getting your name right. If not, my apologies. But he is now sitting atop the heap. Pretty tightly contested at the top right now. I think there's only 4 or 5 points separating like the top five teams. So we will keep an eye on that for the remainder of the season. But yeah, you didn't suck so much, and I sucked a lot. So way to go. Over into the MLS category.
No,
we both still sucked.
No.
I fell 2 places to 50th, clinging to page one.
Did I fall?
No, you didn't fall at all.
Okay, good.
You also did not move forward from the dead last position in the league. So
sweet.
That's still happening. Designated failures by Derek Friedman. 3 shows in a row now sitting on top there. So there's your fantasy update. Let's get into the reality of the weekend where things just continue to suck for me. And start off with that Wrong Side of the Pond Derby. Tottenham 1, Chelsea 2.
Welcome to Wembley.
This isn't a welcome to Wembley. Like last year, we played all of our Champions League matches there. I'm going to get into this real quick because I looked this up. Since the new Wembley has been built, Spurs are 2-1-8.
Mm.
2 wins, 1 draw, 8 losses.
Chelsea's played like four of their last five matches at Wembley for some reason.
That's kind of insane.
Three of four or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and you guys have had a much better record in that sense. Not sterling.
No, not super great, but.
But it's better than what we've had to deal with. The last time Spurs actually won was back in December in the Champions League against CSKA Moscow with a 3-1 win. Last year, that was the only win they got at Wembley, which had me feeling really nervous about this entry into the entire season being played at Wembley. As far as Spurs home matches are concerned, as we're waiting to build the new White Hart Lane or get that finished. And the talk in the lead up to this was that Wembley kind of stat and how bad Spurs have been there recently. And a big portion of that and the big portion of the discussion point is the fact that the pitch is so much bigger at Wembley compared to the old White Hart Lane. Mm-hmm. Old White Hart Lane was the smallest pitch in the league over the last few years. That was a title once held by Arsenal, one that we finally stole away from them after they wrecked their old ground to build the Emirates. We became the new small ground. Spurs, apparently, I didn't know this until today, had asked if they could make a smaller pitch at Wembley. Like, obviously, they wouldn't be digging up any of the grass, but they wanted to line the field smaller. Hmm. And the Premier League, for the last few years, have been granting them waivers because everyone's been trying to standardize pitches.
Right.
And
It's not baseball diamonds. Yeah. It can just be whatever you want it to be.
And the Premier League was like, nah, like, you guys are going to be playing in a full-size field at your new stadium. You should be doing it here, too. I made the comment during the game, the Wembley pitch looks gargantuan, though. Like, I know that it's not much bigger than your average pitch anymore, but it just looks humongous. And it does change the way a team like Spurs plays a little bit, given that they're really high-pressing on a small field like the old White Hart Lane pitch. That was really effective for them. Like, the smaller size made a big difference. And I don't think it had a huge impact on today at all. But it was like a huge talking point and one of the reasons I've been concerned about playing there this year. So
welcome to Wembley.
Yeah, welcome to Wembley indeed.
It's a whole year of this. A whole year of can Spurs adapt? Will this be the Achilles heel? Will you be able to sell the right amount of tickets? Or so wasn't there a whole thing about that? Like they weren't gonna let you guys for every match sell
all the tickets that are available. Yeah, there were like 75,000 people in attendance today, which is just humongous.
It's a good amount of folks.
But, you know, are they going to be able to sell that many every game? We don't even know the answer to that right now.
I must say the Huddersfield crowd is not going to bring in a lot.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to be able to pack
that. Hey, they had their highest ever attendance today as well. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's going well
for them. Highest ever Premier League attendance?
Yes, well, given that they've only played two games in the Premier League and only one of them at home.
Right.
Not all that surprising. I don't think it impacted Spurs tremendously, though, on the statistics front. I did delve into this a little bit more deeply. Spurs had a earth-shattering 68% of possession.
Mm-hmm.
18 shots to 9, 5-2 on target, 500 passes completed to 197, and 14 corners to 4. Literally dominated in every category except for the one that actually matters.
This is almost as bad as the during the 2014-2015 season when Chelsea won, and at the end of the season they had to play United, and they had like 26% possession.
Yeah.
And it was that smash and grab Hazard goal like in the 85th minute to seal it. It was almost like that, and the fact that Chelsea had really just no business actually winning this one.
No, you didn't at all. But I mean, that's literally how the game of soccer goes on occasion. The last time Spurs lost a home league match was 15 months ago. 15 months ago.
Who was that to?
Probably Chelsea. I would be surprised if that was
Chelsea
the case.
Match. And
I actually don't know the answer to that. I saw that statistic and had to write it down. But I can't – I don't know. I mean, we'll get into how you feel like Chelsea played here in a minute. But I can't even really – like, Spurs played pretty damn well. Like, obviously, the stats point that out. They looked really good moving forward. They had a sloppy start to the match itself. But other than that –
it's kind of hard to pinpoint what to criticize because it's like you did everything.
Everything but finish.
You dominated. You moved the ball well. You created chances. You created set pieces.
You know, Harry Kane smashing the bar. Courtois made a couple, like, brilliant saves to deny him specifically. Yeah. It just, man, this is one of those games that we've all suffered through them as fans at one point or another where your team just utterly dominates but ends up on the losing side of things. But I have to hear your take. Like, how did you feel? I know how you felt going into the match, like, not good about it.
This is going to be death.
Yeah.
This is going to not be fun at all. Like, a hobbling Chelsea squad, which miraculously got oddly healthier than expected as the week progressed heading into this match. So we were under the assumption Bakayoko was not going to be maybe. If we were lucky, he makes the bench. He's fit enough to come in and do 15 minutes. He ends up starting this match.
Yeah.
Possibly out of necessity. We talked about this last week. We were the alternative was either you put David Luiz in the midfield,
which happened anyway.
Yeah, that ended up still happening.
Mm-hmm.
Or you play Kyle Scott, the U.S. youth international that nobody in America has ever heard of.
Yeah. Michael Scott's son, right?
Yeah, Michael Scott.
Mike Scott's son. Forever, that's what he's going to be. Like, I don't think he's going to be anything else to me. But yeah, I mean, you guys piecemealed together this team.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't want to say you played bad because I think strategically Chelsea looked pretty solid.
Right, and to this strategy, I feel like we're still trying to figure out what that formation was.
Mm-hmm.
Was it a 3-5-2, a 3-4-3? You know, at times it appeared that it was Morata up by himself with maybe Willian kind of right off of him.
Yeah, they listed it as a 3-5-2 in the pre-match.
Yeah. I also saw, like, FotMob was listing it as, like, a 4-2-3-1. Yeah, no one knew what was happening.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about formations before and how much they actually mean in the grand scheme of things. But whatever it was that they set out in worked pretty damn well. I do think it was odd. Like, Spurs created their chances. They dominated because tactically they were the superior team. Mm-hmm. It really was just like that, the last element of the game, which is the finishing and the one that matters the most. And it just never pieced together the way it was. David Luiz, while I thought he played really well in midfield, was also crazy undisciplined, as he typically is when he plays out of position.
Very unshocking move by him to be that way.
And Spurs continuously found space behind him and in front of the back line, but just couldn't capitalize in any capacity. So, but I give Antonio Conte a load of credit. You know, there's a lot of stuff happening in this team right now.
Right. There's a lot of who's healthy. Do we have, we don't have enough players, who's coming in. Yeah, there's a lot of unrest and there's a lot of people kind of pointing the finger at him saying, you know, the guy that carried our offense last year, you've run off.
He may have run himself out, and we'll get to him.
Yeah, I think this was Conte saying, this is my club and you're not part of it. You're out of here.
Well, I mean, if you're going to kick one of the players out of that squad, that is probably the place you would want to start too.
I don't know. I mean, I'll take those 20 goals.
Hold on. I'm not saying you shouldn't, but I mean,
see that header by Morata?
Yes. And I'm really glad it wasn't Diego Costa because that would have been in the back of the net.
That was going in, yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about Diego Costa real quickly because this is a cloud that continues to hang over the team. And I think, you know, to Antonio Conte's credit today, like, he kind of showed why he's able to get these results with the team. Like, he instilled a bunch of belief in them.
Mm-hmm.
But the one person he doesn't have belief in at all is Diego Costa, who literally put out a statement this week saying, nah, I'm not coming back to Chelsea, even though you guys are fining me like 200 grand a week because I want to play at Atletico Madrid.
When Conte was pressed on it, he basically laughed it off.
Oh my God, it was incredible. It was an incredible laugh that he kind of had in the pre-match press conference about it.
But then you have Costa is sniping at him through the media saying in these interviews, oh yeah, none of the players actually like Conte. Yeah, he's not really a player manager. Sorry, Diego. It looks like they're still playing for him, as far as I can see.
I mean, he got a lot out of the team that he put out there today and set them up in a way that would at least give them some sort of success. So my question is like, do you legitimately think this is the end of the road for Kosa? Do you think he is willing to sit out and get fined like into oblivion about this entire issue? Or do you think there's a chance that he could still come back?
I don't know. You got Ronald Koeman out of nowhere going, oh, yeah, we'll take him on loan. Like, what? What? My word, do I want Everton to do that? Because if there's any group, as far as U.S. supporters go, that talked so much crap about how Kosa was just a black eye on the sport, if he dons their kit, I will die laughing.
I mean, that's a lot of crow to eat.
Oh my goodness, is it ever?
I think it's pretty unlikely. He's made it very clear that he's missed Spain like the entire time he's been in England. Mm-hmm. And to me, like, while Everton may seem it doesn't seem in the least bit, you know, no one wants
to move to Liverpool. If he's missing Spain, no one's stopping him from being in Spain right now.
Well,
he's the one hanging out in Brazil.
Well, I mean, he is from Brazil originally, although technically a Spaniard.
Yeah, there's that whole thing.
No
one's stopping him from buying a place there.
Well, I mean, he could certainly do that, but I think
he's not coming back to training. Yeah. He's not coming back to Chelsea.
The other thing, reportedly, Atletico are paying his fines right now, or offering to pay his fines. I'm sure it will eventually go into whatever transfer fee they'll pay for him. They seem pretty hot to have him still, but they're in the perfect position as a club right now. Like, the other team is refusing to play him.
Mm-hmm.
He's refusing to play for them. And they're like, literally, this works out in our favor. We're going to end up paying less for him because guys are going to want him out.
They're going to end up buying him for like, you know, 28 million when he's probably worth like, you know, 50 something.
So he's clearly, I kind of think he's on his way out. And I think we've seen the last of him in a Chelsea shirt. But weirder mm-hmm. things have happened.
Very true. More on this match, though. So Bakayoko, Morata, they end up starting,
mm-hmm.
which wasn't supposed to happen, but it did. Morata looked not amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Bakayoko looked not amazing.
Yeah.
Didn't really seem to factor in much, except for when he was just draping his arm across players trying to defend them.
I mean, there's a lot of times where I like literally forgot he was on the field at all. But it's not like Chelsea were getting forward all that often either. So
No, that's true. But it was like, yeah, he kept doing the whole like arm thing, like draping the arm. It's like, that's your move? Because that's not going to work. This is not going to help us.
So the first wrong side of the pond derby of the season in the books.
Thanks to a Marcus Alonso brace, the free kick. Pretty spectacular. It's hard to even hate it.
I couldn't hate it. It was a brilliant free kick. I'm not at all mad at Spurs for the way they set up the wall or the way that Lloris handled that particular goal. I do think Lloris totally bottled the second one. Like, it went right underneath
him. Yeah, he kind of flopped and then put it at the near post.
I mean, it was obviously a tough shot to save, and Lloris was kind of in a no-win situation overall. But man, you know, Marcus Alonso, a guy who's reportedly being kind of pushed out of the picture a little bit.
Well, that was a thought. Like, they were, you know, Conte was going to get all these wingbacks, and the wingbacks he kept targeting were wingbacks that would play on that left side, which would be taking Alonso's role away.
Well, I thought that was kind of odd, because he was one of your better players last season as well.
By far. And yet your other wingback is a midfielder turned wingback. You know, not really a guy that has played the role that long,
mm-hmm.
played well, and, you know, Victor Moses did well last year playing that role, but mm-hmm. you'd figured that'd be the one where, like, hey, we need to get someone like a little more dialed in and established in that role.
Speaking of Victor Moses, this is going to be a little harsh on him here. As someone who's a bald man, do you think you could write him a letter and let him know, like, hey, you're clearly bald.
It's time to give it up.
Maybe give up the braids.
I'm,
he's going to have a Friar Tuck braid here soon enough.
That'll be a good look.
Yeah.
As a bald man,
mm-hmm.
as someone who hit that period, sadly, in my mid-20s.
Hey, it happens to some people. Where it was just,
hey, time to close up shop up here.
Mm-hmm.
After doing that myself, I do definitely now see people that need to do that, and it takes everything within me to not go up to them like, hey,
just let it go.
Trust okay. me, you're gonna feel better about it afterwards. It's gonna be shocking at first, but it's time to shave your head.
Just have to get there. Because
this right here is just ridiculous.
Someone who just made that choice.
Yeah.
Finally, just bit the bullet. Dan McNally.
Really?
Yeah, VP of operations for FC Cincinnati.
Oh, man.
The Englishman finally said it's time.
It's a good time of year to do it.
Give it a shave.
Do it when it's nice and hot.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, the first time I did it was in the middle of winter, and it was like, oh, my goodness.
Culture shock.
Like, I've never been more cold in my life.
Yeah. It's been a while since I've shaved the head, but the summertime is almost always the best time to do so. But
much better time to do it.
But yeah, you would think you would buy on that other side of the pitch instead of Alonso's side, but I think he may have just saved himself a little bit of time there. The other thing that I thought was odd from the Chelsea perspective,
uh-huh.
Azpilicueta wearing the armband today?
He is the vice captain.
What?
Yeah, he's the vice captain. Did you miss that memo when I went out?
I did.
Okay.
I'm not going
to lie. Yeah, he's the vice captain. There was a lot of people wondering if it was going to be David Luiz
getting that role. Yeah, you think he would get that.
There was actually a lot of talk about David Luiz possibly being the captain straight out.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of concern about, depending on what defenders they brought in, mm-hmm. Gary Cahill might not have been an everyday starter.
Yeah.
So Cahill, obviously the captain, sitting out a red card because of his amazing start to his captaincy.
Yes.
By getting sent off in the first 15 minutes of it. Azpilicueta, or as the shed end calls him, Dave.
Dave. I mean, that's way easier than Azpilicueta, to be fair. So how are you feeling? Last week, a loss to Burnley.
Mm-hmm.
In kind of embarrassing
with
fashion.
With nine men at home,
right? This week, going to Spurs, who everyone are kind of considering like one of the default title favorites.
Right.
Are you
bringing back the...
Almost exactly the same
essentially
time.
Essentially the same team.
By the way, they made a big signing in Davinson Sanchez this week.
Right.
I think that's going to be a really big pickup for them. Still have a couple of areas that need to be addressed, and I think they will so soon.
Any more French players you're going to get? Because those have been working out for you lately.
Why don't you shove it?
Some French wingers.
Guy. Are you feeling better about things? Because last week you were feeling kind of cataclysmic.
Listen, I'm not sitting here going like, oh yeah, we're back in the title hunt. I'm not there yet. But here's the big thing. This match today, the way that this team fought hard, dug in, and ended up snatching this victory late,
mm-hmm.
is something that the 2015-2016 big let-off from
the title.
Title, 10th place finish, Chelsea never did. Didn't have it in them. So the fact that in week two they've already shown that, that's at least good because it tells me like, hey, we're not going to be this lifeless team where there's clearly, you know, something under the rug that's really, you know, the real culprit of why performance is low. This showed me a lot more.
Yeah.
This showed me that this team is still fighting.
Yeah.
And still has the character to persevere through a season that's probably still ultimately not going to be amazing.
I think that too, like for anyone who's doubting on Antonio Conte's abilities, I think that's a big sign of the difference between the two. Clearly the year where you guys had that huge let-off, that was a Mourinho issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like he had burned all of his bridges within the team.
Get ready for that next year, United.
Yeah, I mean, it's coming. It's year three is literally how it works with him. But I think that is a huge sign for what Antonio Conte is doing within this team. Like if you are doubting him in any capacity, the fact that he's getting that type of result out of that team and that environment – I think shows a lot of what he's actually pulling in the club itself. So I don't think you guys are going to have that disastrous of a letdown, but I agree. I think there's still a lot of ground to be made up.
Yeah, I still don't think we have what it takes to be in the top two or top three at the end.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm just trying not to let this get to my head. I don't think this is going to be an ongoing issue for Spurs.
This is an outlier.
This is just an outlier. I feel like Harry's going to get his goals. We'll get out of the month of August, and we'll be in much better shape.
Yeah, so. You only got to play one more August match.
So. That's right.
Let's move on. Liverpool hanging on, finding a way to get a not super exciting 1-0 win over Crystal Palace. Salah not starting this one, which made no sense, and I think it showed that just the offense just lacked that just spark and creativity and pace.
Yeah. I thought it was a really weird choice. Maybe he's just not fit yet after moving over to their ranks. He ultimately did come on the pitch, but it's one of those things that's kind of like, why? It's a real puzzling situation, especially with Coutinho still out, and we'll talk more about the Coutinho situation here in a minute. But let's actually talk a bit about this match. Mane, the predictable person getting the winner for them, late on. Like,
and who set him up in that one?
Off the top of my head, I can't remember.
That would be old former Chelsea youth player, Solank.
Oh, that guy. I remember who you're talking about. Okay.
Comes off the bench, and within seconds, sets up Mane for what ends up being the winner.
Mm-hmm.
This is a player that was a Chelsea youth player. Basically, his contract ended. Liverpool picks him up. They're still eventually going to have to pay Chelsea a little bit of money. But, like, they're literally going to get this player for, like, $3 million. And he's already looking like he's going to be contributing nicely.
Well, Klopp has the ability to pull that out of some of those younger players. And, you know, I think given the situation that's happening with Coutinho, they're getting results. And I think that's what matters for them as they kind of fight through this little torrent of issues. Let's take a little bit of time to focus in on Palace. Much improved. They looked really, really bad in the first match of the season. I thought they battled on pretty well in this particular game, and showed that there's a little bit more fight to this team than what looked like last week as a group that were kind of rolling over.
So, yeah, I mean, Benteke there had a couple chances in the second half to get a goal.
Mm-hmm. Say that a lot about Benteke.
Yeah, a lot of chances, not a lot of finishes.
Yeah, especially during his spell at Anfield as well.
absolutely.
So this Coutinho situation, though, I think we do need to touch on this. Barcelona have supposedly set a deadline for accepting the bid of tonight. So if he's not moved by now, that means he's probably not going to.
Well, that was tonight, London time.
Yeah.
That was like 7 hours ago.
So it's, you know, we've not heard anything about it, but it could also be like news would break in the morning. I think it's highly unlikely that they're going to sell. I think they've taken a pretty strong position. They're not going to. But it is like an issue. The guy,
it's a cloud hanging over this club.
The guy specifically put in a transfer request on potentially multiple occasions.
Yeah, no showing.
No showing the training. Klopp's going to have to deal with this, and they're not in a position where they can't be like, you know, they're not going to lock him out in the way that they're kind of like Chelsea are locking out Diego Costa at the moment.
Look, and I think we mentioned it last week, like, if you're Liverpool, you're in a hard situation where you either ride this out and hope somehow you can rectify the situation or whatever, or get this guy to at least show up and play this season or whatever. But we're staring down at the final week of the transfer window. If you're going to sell him here in the next 24, 48 hours, you're getting a crap ton of money back, but it doesn't buy you a whole lot of time to actually bring anyone back in with that money, which you're going to need to do.
Yeah, have to do. And really, at this point of the season, who's going to be willing to give up one of their talismen?
Right.
You know, we just kind of reached the point where that's not going to happen. But don't worry, Barcelona took care of it by signing Paulinho. So
that's pretty good. They get him pretty cheap, right?
No, they spent a pretty penny on him. I think it was like $30 million or something along those lines. To be fair, Paulinho, while he didn't have the greatest of spells at Tottenham, I don't think he was terrible, but we definitely got good money by selling off to China. Paulinho gets a bad rap because his time at Spurs was kind of seen as a failure.
Right.
I mean, he scored a hat trick for Brazil against Uruguay or Argentina. I can't remember one of the two in World Cup qualifying pretty recently. He's not dropped out of the Brazil team at all, despite making a move to China. And then on top of all of that, he also played for Spurs under Tim Sherwood. So I think that like takes a pretty big chunk out of how you can rate anyone.
That puts an asterisk on his Spurs career.
Absolutely.
It was during the Gimlet days.
But it's also definitely not like a Coutinho, right? Like Coutinho is more of a Neymar replacement.
Like, is he going to even play at Barcelona?
Well, I think the bigger issue for Barcelona right now is that they're aging.
They're like, terrible.
Rapidly.
They're not good.
And you look at some of their best players outside of, you know, Suarez and Messi, obviously. Iniesta's getting up there in years. There seem to be a lot of issues with the board, like a lot of players who have retired or have left recently, Neymar included, have bashed this new board that's going to come into place.
It's like the golden age of Barcelona here that we've had over the past
10 years.
You know, 10 years. These guys are fading, and I don't know what happened, but it doesn't look like, unlike Madrid, who has all these hot young players coming up, you're not seeing that out of Barcelona right now.
Yeah, I mean, La Masia is praised for like producing all these great players.
Where are they at right now?
But I don't know that they produced any that were near the class of the ones that kind of were in that dominant spell. Look, think about when Xavi left and retired. They've not ever really replaced him. They, you know, put a lot more in Iniesta, and that you can do that because
Iniesta. Is he still playing in Qatar?
I don't think he's playing anymore. I could be wrong about that, but
player manager.
I think that's more akin to what's happening. But they didn't replace him. You know, they heaped it onto Iniesta, who's now getting up there in years. He literally just admitted for the first time he's thinking about his future. Manchester City have supposedly said we're willing to pay the 300 million euro release clause for Messi.
I think, and let's hit on this right now, because this, I think, is very fascinating, this whole Messi possibly going to City. I think what happened is through the WhatsApp or the whatever, through back channels or just them talking on the phone, I think Messi sees the writing on the wall with this Barcelona side.
Yeah.
I mean, saw it through the Super Cup just recently, like this week, knowing it
did not go
we
well.
We're not beating Madrid this year.
No.
Like, we're not winning the title.
No.
And I think he sees that. He sees where he's at in his career. And he's probably told Pep, like, dude,
maybe,
I'm ready to roll out
of
here.
Maybe I could do it.
Yeah,
maybe
I'm ready to bounce.
Yeah, it's a really weird situation that's happening there. And I think Poligno's ended up being the brunt of the joke at the moment. But it is kind of the state of affairs that's there and shows the desperation they're having over this Coutinho move. Like, they're banking on this happening.
Mm-hmm.
And it may not very well happen at all, which is insane because they have, like, this massive single-player war chest that they built up. But, yeah, you're right. Like, they've really struggled in that respect. So,
yeah. Strange times for Barcelona ahead. Yeah. For Liverpool, though, I don't know. They got 4 points so far on the season, but I feel like they're still just needing some pieces to make a real go at it this year.
They desperately need to pull in a top-level striker. I think that's something that they need and they lack. And I think they'd get on fine without Coutinho if they had that type of striker at their disposal. But, again, it's kind of like
Firmino had a bad match also.
Yeah, he did not look very good at all.
There was one point where he tried to flip the field and ended up just cracking one of his own players in the side with the ball. Like,
always good.
Couldn't even get a pass off without hitting his own guy.
All right, let's move on from Liverpool and get into
happier things.
Slightly happier. I'll take this for my weekend. This is the win of my weekend.
Oh, yeah.
This is if there win. Was one. Stoke 1, Arsenal 0. I'll be honest, I was a Stoke fan throughout the course of this match. That's not all that surprising given my distaste for the team that wasn't wearing red this weekend. Can we talk about Hesse, like, arriving, like, in the middle of the week, stepping in and immediately making a massive impact?
I don't want to jump the shark here, but kind of sexy.
Yeah. Yeah, and we talked last week.
Hey, let's get a PSG loney out of nowhere, like, boom!
Or maybe it was 2 weeks ago in the preview, we're like, stoked where they've lost the sexy. And you thought that even more when Shaqiri went down injured pretty early in this match, pulled a hammy, looked like. And you're like, oh, here we go. Like, there goes the last of the sexiness in there. And I knew, like, Hesse was a massive signing when they made that signing, which kind of came out of nowhere. Maybe I wasn't paying close enough attention.
Yeah.
But
didn't go on my radar either.
I don't know what it is about Mark Hughes. He has this ability to get these guys who have come from really high-class clubs to come and sign for Stoke.
Well, when you're a former Chelsea player, yeah, people want to come play for you.
I would wager it probably has more to do with him being a former Barcelona player, but that's neither here nor there.
They're not even that good.
But, I mean, this is kind of in the same vein of, like, you know, Boyan, who, again, is looking a little bit better this season, at least in the first couple matches. You know, Shaqiri, obviously, you know, we've seen a couple of these other guys who've cut their, you know, their early careers out of big clubs Hesse is probably the cream of the crop of the players that they picked up, though. Left PSG, where he kind of got forced out by the Neymar situation, which, again, like, they have some incredible players that are sitting on the bench at PSG.
For maybe not much longer.
Most likely not much longer. But at the same time, he immediately looked really, really good in the situation.
Mm-hmm. So good that he scored a goal.
Yeah, and a good one at that.
Lacazette also scored a goal. It was ruled offside. And I would say that was probably, not probably, that was absolutely the wrong call.
By the letter of the law, and I'm not
100% level.
Right. There was like, they zoomed in and it looked like his heel was offside, maybe slightly. I'm not saying that that's the correct call. That is not what I'm doing. But I do think it shows that there's ambiguity in the way that that particular rule is set up right now, where like the player has to gain some sort of an advantage. Like, why? I don't even know why we're having a debate here at all.
Yeah.
It should be like if any part of the human being is past the last part of the other defender, like that should probably be an offside call. I still agree with you. I think this was a hosed call in this particular situation, and that goal should have stood. And you're shaking your head because that is your fantasy captain, if I'm not wrong.
Mm-hmm. You kind of needed it.
Yeah.
But this is the. This is the same thing that Arsenal does. They struggle at Stoke.
Mm-hmm.
The last 8 visits during the Premier League, like Premier League matches, at the Britannia Bet 365, whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
Arsenal, since 2010-2011, 1-3-4. At Stoke.
It's not all that great.
No. And that one win came at the end of last season when they caught that hot streak there at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And they beat them like 4-1.
As Arsenal tend to do at the end of the year.
But yeah, the futility at Stoke continues for Arsenal.
Well, this is, I mean, it's not just at Stoke. Like, this is kind of the Arsenal story. Like, everyone was hot to trot over them last week. Their fans were all like, ah, look at us. We won this really intense match with Leicester.
A match against Leicester in which you gave up 3 goals.
Yeah, don't forget about that aspect of it. There are still issues with that team. And anyone who's I have a lot of respect for what Arsene Wenger has achieved in his career. But how the board and that club haven't seen that, like, he's a bit of the issue here. I get that you're going to have to rebuild, but it's the same issues that dog them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
All the time. Oh, by the way, they also looked not all that great in this match. So
the kryptonite, though.
Mm-hmm.
Stoke away.
That's right.
Let's go to a team that is having no troubles at all, and that is Manchester United.
Oh, boy.
Rolling again. Their second 4-0 victory of the season.
Mm-hmm.
So they are scoring 8, conceding 0 right now.
They're looking real good. We said this last week,
yeah.
But I mean, they're looking really, really good. And
2 matches in, Lukaku 3 goals, Pogba 2 goals.
Mm-hmm.
And the stars are firing, and oh, don't worry, one of the most prolific strikers of the past 20 years looks to be making a contract negotiation headway to sign and be the pop off the bench for them.
Yeah.
Freaking Zlatan's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
So you have Zlatan, who is ageless and possibly an alien,
mm-hmm.
As just some guy that can come in like the 70th minute.
I mean, that's incredible. They're talking about Zlatan. I mean, there's still talk that he's not going to be available until potentially November. Could
that's
potentially
really not
be
that
a little
far
earlier.
Away. If you think about it.
Stop. I don't need to think about how that's not all that far away.
It's almost September already.
But, I mean, that's incredible that that's something that could potentially happen now, too. So, look, second-year issue with Mourinho. Obviously, it'll all come crumbling down next year. But, I mean, if you had to pick a team right now that you're like, there's the side that's going to win the title.
Mm-hmm.
They've not exactly, like, cut it against anyone.
I don't know if you saw, though. I already tweeted that the title race is over.
Oh, is it?
On Saturday.
That's good to know. I'm glad to know that.
It was already over by 10 a.m. on the second week of the season.
Hand it to Mourinho.
already over.
And it's Mourinho. So United continuing to look pretty good. Let's talk for a second, though, about Swansea. Obviously, and we'll talk a little bit more about the player who departed, but they just got a large chunk of money deposited in their accounts.
Some cash in hand.
They need to do something, like, badly with that money. Really badly.
What would you do? What is, like, where's the one spot you throw in it?
Well, I mean,
the back line, right? They think, do need a lot of help there.
Yeah, I think you could probably find a solid defender for, right, you know, 20, 30 mil.
I mean, as good as he is, they're still starting a guy on that back line that was playing for Wickham like two seasons ago.
Yeah. Obviously, that's not a good situation to be in.
I mean, good for him, but that's, yeah, you want a little something better there if you want to hang around in the Premier League.
Yeah, I think defense is the priority, but, you know, losing Sigurdsson is obviously a huge hole for them. He's one of the few guys who's actually produced for them on a regular basis. They need to find someone who's capable of feeding in Llorente as well. I don't know. I mean, there's who should they get? I don't know. But clearly defense needs to be strengthened. You would think that Paul Clement would know that's the case. But as we are kind of talking about with the other teams like Liverpool, who might have a large chunk of money to spend, who are you getting at this stage? You know, that becomes the ultimate question. And is someone going to be willing to give up a really good defender to make that happen? So
I'm we'll just see.
Hoping it's not Cameron Carter-Vickers getting pulled in on loan from Spurs. Uh-oh. That would be a pretty detrimental position for him to go into at this point.
Hey, trial by fire. That's how you learn, right?
I suppose so.
Let's whip around the rest of the EPL. Where would you like to start?
Sure, let's go to one of the more exciting matches this weekend, Southampton versus West Ham. A guy that you're pretty fond of, picking up his first two goals for his first club.
And as you pointed out, very Chicharito-like fashion.
Yeah, we were talking about that before we started recording today. I wrote down here, prototypical, quintessential Chicharito goals.
And both shots were within 4 feet of the line.
And both of them were follow-ups on shots prior to that point.
Yep, cleaning up.
He continues to prove his worth as a garbage striker, and I say that literally with, like, the utmost respect, like, there are few players that can finish off those type of chances the way that Chicharito did. And that second one in particular, coming off the bar and he immediately volleys it.
Yeah.
Like, that's a very hard finish. Not only to, like, recognize that you should be taking that effort, but also executing it.
Right, because he's literally just hitting it as it falls down towards him. He's not like he can settle it or anything. You're just swinging at it and hoping you time it all right.
He timed it very well. Those goals were particularly well-timed, too, given that Marko Arnautović, their record signing from Stoke, by the way.
Record insane person.
Was sent off with a straight red.
It's not like this is like, you know, just some weird thing that he did this just, you know, over the weekend. Like, this is a guy known for being a complete hothead.
Yeah. Yeah, this is kind of his M.O.
Like, West Ham can't be, like, thrown off by this whole situation.
Well,
like,
just
this is what you bought.
A brutal, brutal elbow that he put in. I can't remember the player he actually did it to, but just incredible that that's how he's going to try to level the playing field a little bit. Rightly sent off. They were already down a goal at that point. Chicharito manages to pull off two goals to pull them back level after they were down two. Southampton then awarded a penalty in injury time.
I love it.
And they convert. That was their second of the match. Really entertaining stuff there. Southampton continuing to be a side that will entertain. And if only what makes them a little bit more entertaining is they're just as likely to concede as they are to score at this point. Still without Virgil van Dijk, or Van Dijk, or however you want to pronounce that.
Depends on how they're feeling about him that day.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. I think they're feeling very Van Dijk-y at the moment with him. Given that he's trying to force his way out and make a move to Liverpool, who could use a player of his quality, but...
he'd come to Chelsea.
Yeah.
If you want.
You'd take him?
Sure.
Why not?
Why not? We need people.
That's true.
People who need people. How about a team that is terrible? Brighton Hove Albion lose again. They lose to Leicester City, I believe... Okazaki got the scoring going. Harry Maguire, I don't even know who that is, but in the 54th minute, he hit one in. Ryan Mahrez, who's kind of a want-away player right now, it seems like, putting in a really good shift, assisting in both of these goals. Kind of the contrast to a lot of these players that we joked about last week being a injured, if you will, conveniently injured at the beginning of the season, you know, as they're trying to get moves elsewhere.
Yeah.
This is a guy still fighting, still playing.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a guy who I think missed his boat a little bit, and at the tail end of last year put in another transfer request back when it was supposed that Arsenal were still in for him.
I think Leicester also missed that boat in actually getting substantial cash for him.
Yeah, but maybe they'll end up pulling that, given that he's played really, really well in the opening two matches of the season for the former champions at this point. But it is kind of nice seeing a guy who's like, I want away, but I'm still going to do what you guys are paying me for.
Do my job.
Yeah.
Burnley 0, West Brom 1. It's just straight up a poolless match.
Yeah.
I mean, just a terrible, awful match in which West Brom finds one goal and calls it a day.
Yeah.
Watford 1. They get the 2-0 victory over Bournemouth, who I think a team a lot of us were kind of high on.
Yeah.
So far, slow out the gates.
Mm-hmm. I may have picked them as my potential surprise team of the season, and they're making me look like a fool.
Is that not looking good now?
Once again, proving that you shouldn't listen to any of my predictions ever. Let's move over to today's early match. Huddersfield 1, Newcastle 0. Again, another sign of why you should never pay attention to what you and I predict, because you and I both predicted that Huddersfield would finish, I think, in the bottom two.
Yeah. They're 2-0.
They are 2-0. They've won every match in their Premier League history. The only club to have ever done that, by the way. And David Wagner, the German-American.
Alleged.
Really making this team play above expectations so far. I mean, they are playing some good-looking football. As we mentioned a little bit earlier on, they've also registered the highest ever crowd they've ever had in their new stadium. I think a little hair over 24,000 that were there today. I just – they're fun to watch right now, and I don't know that they're necessarily –
it's a cool little darling story to see this minnow so far, hanging with the big kids. And by the way, those big kids, not so great. Newcastle, opposite. Mm-hmm. They are 0-2 to start the season. And, you look at their starting 11 they threw out, and it's like just a bunch of dudes that are like just good enough to maybe make a Premier League squad, but just not good enough.
Yeah.
Like Dwight Gale.
Well, I was going to say him.
100 goals last year, I think, for them.
Well, and he could barely crack into Palace's team on a regular basis before he made the move over last season. Just a lot of championship caliber
Christian
players.
Christian Atsu, who's been a Chelsea loanee for like 5 years.
Jonjo Shelvey, a guy suspended for this particular match, but he's their club captain and, obviously has a lot of Premier League experience, but at the same time, you got to be like, guys, you have to invest. And it was Rafa Benitez was asked after the match, like, are you guys now even more desperate to go out and do something big in the transfer window? And Mike Ashley just spent like the previous week explaining how he can't spend any money in the transfer windows, which seems like a load of hogwash. But at the same time, Newcastle are hurting, and I don't think they're going to go down. But like, this is how teams start off by going down. It's not properly investing in their own squad.
Bingo. City, Everton, they'll play tomorrow as we record here on Sunday night. Mm-hmm. So let's go stateside. Talk a little domestic action.
Yeah, real quickly before we do that, just talking about Gylfi Sigurdsson finally getting his £45 million move to Swansea. Spurs got $4.5 million out of that deal.
Did they get money?
There's often sell-on clauses.
Yeah, but it's not like they were like developing him.
You can still write it into the contract. Oh. And sometimes people agree to it. Spurs also got, I think, in somewhere in the neighborhood of £5 million out of the Poligno move as well. So
I think Wickham got, like last year, they got some money from Jordan Ibe's move from Liverpool to Bournemouth.
Mm. But yeah, let's get over into the domestic action this weekend. MLS full-on going at this point. Obviously, we're kind of getting to the stage in the season where we're starting to see a playoff picture appear a little bit. But as things always go, like the bubble around the playoff line is going to be one that we see teams kind of fall into and climb back into. And at this point, the Crew still have a good shot at it. Chicago.
Yeah, they sit in fifth right now. Chicago kind of starting to plummet. Mm-hmm. You know, this was a team that was riding high, top of the East. They're now in third as they lose again on the weekend, losing to Toronto, who have, you know, supplanted themselves again as the team in the East.
Yeah. And they're getting hot at the right point of the season as well. Let's talk about one of the biggest blunders of the weekend. What was an epic own goal from Jared Watts of Colorado Rapids, making about a 50-yard back pass to Tim Howard, hitting it a little too hot, a little bit not near Tim.
Right.
And obviously it ends up an own goal. Howard made this ridiculous diving tackle that he tried to make.
Can we even call it that? Like,
he lunged with his foot, and you knew what he was doing there. He was trying to not give up the indirect free kick on the pass back and picking that up.
He tried to just deflect it as much as he could, but instead didn't touch it at all.
I'm sorry, Tim. You're an experienced enough goalkeeper to know just concede the indirect free kick. It's really hard to convert free kicks in the box, especially indirect ones. I don't know at all why he wouldn't have just sacrificed that for a second, but that ended up being the lone goal for DC in the match, and they end up 1-0 winners, adding kind of insult to injury for a bad week for the Rapids.
Pablo getting rolled.
Club legend Pablo Maceroni getting the sack after obviously a very poor year for them. They had a bit of an up year last year with Jermaine Jones.
Yeah, so 38, 51, and 35 is his record as Rapids head coach.
It was interesting. Alexi Lalas, we also have on the now recently finished Seattle
Minnesota
game. And at halftime, Alexi Lalas was talking about how he thinks this might be the end of the young, inexperienced coach in MLS, because we've seen all this investment and we're getting all these big name players that are coming into the league now, or at least bigger name players. I hope that's not the case. Like, to me, that's a really kind of sad thing to hear about, is like, should that kind of thing be happening? Should we see the end of that type of era happen in MLS? And I really, really don't want that to be the case, because we've seen some good managers who had experience in this league come out who haven't had a lot of experience in the coaching ranks.
But I think to another extent, though, like, as the lower tiers continue to grow, I mean, we'll get to that in a second here, USL continuing to expand.
Mm-hmm.
There's more coaching opportunities at the pro level for a guy to kind of cut his teeth instead of taking, you know, this, you know, club staple. I'm like, hey, now you're the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that go well. We've seen that go bad. I mean, this is a thing that happens in sports all the time. I mean, in baseball, just over the past couple years of the MLB, there's probably a half dozen guys that were just thrusted straight out of from retirement, you know, from, hey, I'm hanging up the cleats, to, hey, you're the manager now. Like, two or three of them did all right.
Yeah.
Two or three of them have already been fired.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what's going to happen. You have to kind of see some of these guys fail, because that's how these things go. Not everyone who's a good young player who's recently retired and become a manager are going to be able to do, you know, you think of someone like, who's the old Dortmund coach? Thomas Tuchel, a young guy who's come through, obviously
didn't go well.
It didn't
Already
go
been blown out of there.
Well, I think that was a little unfair on their behalf as well. But you know, apparently there were bigger issues going on in that situation.
Yeah, but I think that's part of the managerial role. Like, you have to learn how to play the game, right?
Yeah, but then you look at someone like Guardiola, who kind of rolled right out of the Barcelona team into the coaching ranks, and it went pretty well for him. Although it helps when you have the best ever class of players potentially.
Yeah, Zinedine Zidane kind of also same kind of thing. He rolls into coaching roles within the organization. Next thing you know, boom! Hey, you're now running Real Madrid, and oh yeah, you have all the best players. So you really can't F this up.
Yeah. Oh, insane stat on Zidane as a manager. By the way, he has lost more matches. He has lost the same number of matches as trophies he's won in his spell as Real Madrid's manager. Seven. He's lifted seven trophies and only lost seven times.
So that means every time he wins a trophy, he affords himself the ability to lose one match?
I think that is exactly how that works.
Awesome.
Yeah, good to know, huh?
Hey, we did mention a second ago, talking about USL. Let's dive into that here. I'm gonna throw this out to you because I can't keep track of it anymore. Mm-hmm. Past couple weeks, we got some new teams coming about, right?
Yeah, there have been a lot of new teams have entered into the league. Let's start in the Eastern Conference. Birmingham, Alabama.
Yeah.
Good soccer market. They've had a good PDL team that's been there for a while. The Birmingham Hammers. There's now
NPSL.
Sorry. It's been around for a long time, and it's done fairly well.
I think it sounds like they're
potentially becoming that team.
Yes. I mean,
there's a change.org petition that's doing the
rant. It was weird. I looked on their Twitter, the Birmingham Hammers Twitter, kind of just went dark after their end of the matches.
Mm-hmm.
And they also they were get rid of their merchandise at hey, would you like a jersey for $10? Like, kind of thing.
That's not that weird in NPSL, though, to be
not,
fair.
Not terribly. Yeah. You're right. But then, once this announcement was made, they were all, retweeting all that stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. There's probably something there. I know, yeah, a lot of people within the soccer scene there would love to see that name continue on.
Mm-hmm. Some of the other cities that we've seen come on board, probably the biggest name city that came on has to be Las Vegas.
Yeah.
They're going to have a new USL franchise after a lot of mooted MLS interest over the last few months. Potentially still a little bit of heat in that particular category. But, they'll have a built-in rival with Reno that's in state, and then they're actually pretty close to a couple of the other teams that are in Southern California as well. So I think that's a really big market for them to pick up there. A couple of the other teams that we've seen come in as well. Austin, back revived.
Now, what are they going to go as?
Has
it not been announced?
I don't know that that's been announced.
So Aztec's name is possibly not back yet.
Potentially not. Okay. But they're going to be playing. There's I don't know. Is it an F1 circuit track that's there?
They're going to play in the infield or something?
Well, it's right next to it. Oh, and then okay. They're kind of building it into a concert venue as well. But the big issue with Austin, why they never came back, is they couldn't find a suitable venue. And now it sounds
because the venue they had went away with a flooding, right?
Well, yeah, it was a high school stadium and then it flooded. And then, they were like, hey, we shouldn't probably be playing in a high school stadium anymore either. But they are now back in the equation. Staying out west, we also have Fresno, who have a new team that they're bringing into the fold. And then there's, of course, a number of other teams that have been mooted and cities that have been mooted, which I'm not going to get into here. But that's a lot of expansion, including Nashville, who's going to be coming on board next year as well. So just continuing to pick up all these really great cities, USL going from strength to strength, and I think we're going to have an even more competitive league next year. So it's really fun to kind of watch all that kind of unfold over the last few weeks and months.
All right, winners and wankers.
Winners and wankers.
Who's your winner?
So my winner this week, I'm going to go to Schalke over in Germany in the Bundesliga. Uh-huh. They made a really, really cool proposition for their home opener. Basically, every person in attendance over the age of 16 got a free beer.
Nice.
I mean, how awesome is that?
That's fantastic.
And for Bundesliga clubs that routinely pack the house, I mean, Schalke, one of the most well-supported teams in the league as well.
Sure.
That's not a cheap endeavor that they went with. Now, I'm sure it was probably some sort of sponsored element as well. But I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. They have an American, I believe, that's starting to play for them now. So another hot young American in the Bundesliga.
Nice. Who's your winner this week?
My winner, going to keep it local here. This week I will start back in the booth for the UD Flyers. So I have to throw out my winner goes to Lalas Abubakar. Gets his first MLS goal this weekend. For the Columbus Crew. So huge.
Crucial one for them too on the road in Orlando.
Yeah.
So, but good
cool,
for him.
Cool time for him to get a goal number one of his MLS career.
That is awesome. How about your wanker this week?
My wanker, and we talk about this all the time. This is just the way things are heading. It's inevitable. This is just the way that media and the industry is moving. But when I saw that Turner A is putting most of their Champions League matches, once they take over next year, on True TV, formerly Court TV.
Mm-hmm.
And then 80%, of the matches. You know, all those group stage matches that, you know, these past couple of years, Fox has either put on their digital platform or actually sub-let them essentially out to ESPN to put on their digital platform. It's going to be on a digital platform, but it's going to be a streaming, paid streaming service.
Yeah, I saw that.
To watch this. 80% of Champions League matches will be in a stream, paid streaming only package.
It is just frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, it's the way things are moving, but it kind of sucks. It seems like soccer is kind of the test balloon for American sports rights holders to just, hey, this is where we're all going to move, but let's just start it with all these soccer properties.
Yep.
That seems to be the way. This is the sport that's going to be first out the gate for all of these new endeavors.
Well, I think, too, like soccer has a kind of I'll pay to watch my team mentality that doesn't really exist in other sports at this point here. So,
because as fans of the European game here in America, we've had to scratch and claw to find our matches for, you know, 20 some odd years now.
Yep. Well,
gonna continue.
Enjoy pulling more dollars out of your pocket to watch your favorite soccer teams play.
You got that. You got NBC Gold.
Feeling a little bit lighter these
fun
days.
Fun times. I think ESPN's getting ready to launch some new thing that's going to be more of a paid platform.
That is correct. Hooray. my winker this week. I'm going to give it up to SC Juventus Bucuretti. Not the Juventus from Italy.
Right.
But the Juventus in
Bucharest.
Bucharest, which is in Romania.
Right.
Their Romanian first division side. I'm giving it to their player, and there's no way I'm going to get his last name right here, but I'm going to try. George Calentaru.
Sounds good.
I doubt it's correct because there are a bunch of letters that I don't know how they're accurately pronounced here. George Calentaru, I'm giving it to him. He attempted a Panenka from the penalty spot in the 95th minute, butchered it.
What was the score going into this?
1-2, so his team totally could have tied it up in the 95th minute.
Oh, could have been equalizer.
He tries a Panenka, fails, has the goalkeeper save it, then proceeds to get in a fight with his teammates, then punches a wall and breaks his hand. and the coach literally resigned in the post-game press conference.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. They also have their logo on top of their name being ripped directly from the Italian side. Their logo, also a complete rip of the old Juventus logo, not the new one.
So are they going to wait to move?
And on top of all that, they're not allowed to play in their actual home stadium because it doesn't meet the Romanian first division standards. So they have to play
Is super high.
Away from home.
Those are some high standards.
Yeah. But George gets it for being an absolute numpty, trying to be smooth in his penalty finish, failing at that, fighting with his teammates and breaking his own hand in the process, and forcing his coach to resign afterward. So if there's not a wanker this week that is better than that, I'd like to hear what it is.
Well, yeah. You take the win on that one.
Yeah.
All righty.
That gets us to the end, as always. Thanks for listening. If you want to get a hold of us, you want to contribute to the show in any capacity, let us know. contact@wrongsideofthepond.com via email. Jeremy is @JeremyLance on Twitter. I'm @WrongSideOfThePond on Twitter. Subscribe to the show. That'd be really appreciated.
Yep. Leave an honest 5-star review.
Honest as hell.
Yep.
It's worth all 5.
I mean, you can say whatever you want. Just make sure it's 5 stars.
Yeah. It's all we really care
about. These guys blow 5 stars.
Yeah. They're so good at being bad that I'm giving them 5 stars. But that's it this week. See you in a week's time.
Later.